Nelson Bang, and you're listening to Syracuse University GradCast. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Melissa Welshans. She is the Assistant Director in the Center for Fellowship and Scholarship Advising and is a part of a three-person team of folks that work on national and prestigious fellowships and scholarships. And we are actually announcing with this podcast a new partnership between CIFSA and the graduate school, and I hope and I believe a better support for fellowships and scholarships at the graduate level. And so I wanted to have Melissa on the podcast as a way of kind of thinking through how to explain what a national or prestigious fellowship is, why you might want to do this, and so on. And so I am excited to have you, Melissa, with us. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to share what I know with graduate students and to also kind of share that we are working more closely together to support grads.
So what exactly are national scholarships, fellowships, prestigious, they're sort of variously called. What is this beast that we're talking about?
Yes. So the beast is, the way we define it in our office is that national scholarship and fellowships are awards that are usually prestigious and that they are competitive. They're almost exclusively merit-based as opposed to based on financial need. And most importantly, they are awards that you will apply to that are funded by funders outside of Syracuse University. So they are not internal awards, which would be what we call things like awards offered by the graduate school or your department or college. There are awards offered by institutions like the National Science Foundation. So, you know, that's an example of a federal funder or other funders that might be private foundations.
You don't go, in other words, to the financial aid office for this, and you don't necessarily go to your department. I think that some people can be confused and say, I didn't get a TA assignment this semester, so can I work with you to, you know, establish something like that? I think we're going to be able to get to that, mm-hmm. but... The basic idea here is that these are external fellowships, not something that is created by the university, that is difficult to get, competitive at a national level, and mm-hmm. that are prestigious in the sense that they really make an impact on your academic and even career trajectory if you get them.
That's right. Yes. I would say that for most of the opportunities, while often they do carry some sort of financial support in the kind of traditional way we often think of scholarships, the real value of them is that they really put you in a network of professionals within your field, help get your name out there amongst individuals who, are working in the same areas that you are, and offer a lot of added benefit to your ability to pursue the kind of career goals that you have.
Can you give me some examples of them? Can we talk through some examples just to kind of paint a picture for people listening?
Absolutely. So I'll go with one that I already mentioned briefly. So the National Science Foundation offers an award called the Graduate Research Fellowship Program. And that award is funded by the National Science Foundation, so a federal organization, and it provides graduate students who are pursuing research-based master's and PhD programs in STEM and social sciences, a five-year scholarship. Three of those years, you're offered a $37,000 stipend per year. So pretty good chunk of change for three of those 5 years. The institution that you're earning your graduate degree at also receives a amount of money. I think this year it's been increased to $14,000. So there's an incentive for you to get it to support your own lab and college and institution. But on top of that, it also provides networking, mentorship, kind of broad disciplinary professional support as you develop your career as a burgeoning researcher in STEM or social sciences, and also STEM education, I should mention. So it's an award that is highly competitive. But if you get it, it can be really transformative in the kinds of resources that you receive as a graduate student and the kind of doors that are open for you when you enter into the workforce as a professional.
So what's an example of one that is not federal? Because I know that the NSF GRFP, the one you were just talking about, requires, for instance, a person to have a U.S. citizenship, which or permanent residency, I believe. And obviously there are ones for which there are different requirements. But what's one that's sort of not a U.S. federal government initiated fellowship or scholarship?
Great question. So the first one that comes to mind is an award funded by the American Association of University Women. And that's an individual private foundation that has a mission of supporting undergraduate and graduate education for individuals who identify as female. And they have a couple of awards specifically for graduate students who identify as female. And so they have awards that are for what they call selected professions, where individuals who are studying particular fields, especially fields where women are underrepresented. So you can imagine STEM, business, law, where individuals can apply, and they are tuition supporting awards as well as awards that, like the NSF, provide you with a lot of mentorship and networking opportunities. They also offer awards specifically for international students, which is great. And just as you were saying, Dan, one of the nice things I think for international students about awards that aren't necessarily tied to federal funding is they do tend to be more available to individuals who don't hold US citizenship. And I think again that the AAUW suite of awards, they have a dissertation fellowship. Like I said, they also have the selected professions fellowships. They're a really great example of an opportunity that it's not tied to the federal government and it has a very specific aim. So like I said, it's about supporting women. And so they really define the criteria across their awards based on their own individual goals. And that's really true across both federal and private awards, I would say, is that one of the things that one has to do when they're looking for what awards you might want to apply for is what is the mission of the funder? You know, are they trying to increase the amount of STEM researchers in the US? Are they trying to support and uplift individuals from a particular minority group or underserved population? And then one thing I haven't mentioned is that what almost all of these opportunities have in common is that the application process requires that you write a personal statement and or a research statement articulating for the funder how it is you actually fit with their mission. So it's very, very important to actually get to have a pretty strong sense of who they want to fund so that you can both A, decide if you fit their mission, and then B, if you do, articulate that in your application materials for them.
We might be now getting on to the question of how we are involved, you and I, and what kinds of assistance we can provide. And because I think that there are these scholarships out there, there are these fellowships out there, but they're often a little daunting to work on and to obtain as a solo person. So, you know, a Fulbright, something like that, they require a very skilled application. How do we help them? I guess I have an answer and you probably do as well.
Yes, I do.
How can we help a grad student to sharpen these applications and maximize their chances?
Absolutely. And this is a moment where I also like to self-disclose that I received my own graduate degree from Syracuse University. I received my PhD in English in 2017. And I know, you know, what it felt like to feel completely intimidated by the prospect of applying to a national award. And so what I love about the job that I do and the work that I can do, that our office can do with your office, Dan, is really helping demystify the process, helping students break these applications down into digestible components. And really, that's what we do. We will meet with you to help you discern what's going to be a good fit. And then once you've decided what you want to apply for, we will walk you through that application process. And that includes kind of going through the application components and giving you a sense of what we know the foundation is kind of looking for from these applications. You will write drafts many, many drafts of copious your drafts. copious drafts of your application essays, which we will collaborate with you on to help you revise and edit them to present yourself in the most articulate and kind of best way you can. And then we, you know, give you advice on who to ask for letters of recommendation, which sometimes can take some navigating as well. And then if you are applying for an opportunity that requires an interview and you're selected for an interview, we also offer that kind of support as well. We can prepare you to feel confident in an interview and then ultimately, hopefully celebrate your success if you do happen to win the opportunity that you've applied for.
I know a lot of grad students are aware of, and maybe some people who are listening have even gotten these types of things, a Fulbright or a similar award at the undergraduate level. And I wanted to talk about some of the ways that this can be a game changer at the graduate level, because I think that it can be a little bit hard to know. I'm so busy. I've got a PI. I've got all this work to do. Is this just more hassle, more taking up my time? Versus, you know, how does this actually, you know, help me sort of lift off my career, advance my career, move on to the next stage?
Yeah, I think it's really important. And I know that that for me was one of the things that perennially prevented me from applying for national awards when I was a graduate student. And well, I guess two reasons. One, I was lucky to be in a program that funded me for 5 years and had found other institutional forms of support to extend that when I needed it to complete my dissertation. And so the financial incentive wasn't necessarily super strong, luckily. But the other thing was really the time commitment. You know, I, you know, kind of being really focused on the challenges of coursework and then qualifying exams and teaching assignments and, you know, actual dissertation writing. It can be difficult. All of that. It can be really difficult to think about how you or why you should bake in time and you're already very busy and compact schedule to think about applying for national awards. And so it's something that one does have to make time for because they are time consuming. But as you're suggesting, Dan, I think they can be really, really valuable. And I would say one of the main reasons for a graduate student at any level, whether you're at the master's level, PhD level, and whether or not you're in coursework as a graduate student in the PhD, or if you're at the dissertation phase, One of the reasons to apply for a national award is because it helps get your name out. It really helps you begin building that network of professional colleagues across institutions throughout the US and even sometimes internationally. Because most of these opportunities have review panels that are made up of professionals in your field, you will begin to show professionals in your field who you are and what you're interested in. And it doesn't necessarily mean that somebody's gonna, you know, like reach out to you after reading your application. That actually probably would never happen. But they might be somebody who actually is sitting on a hiring committee later down the line, and they recognize your name and were really impressed by your materials, you know, small things like that. Or for some of these opportunities, if you do receive them, they include conferences specific for individuals who hold that particular award, or support to attend academic events where you can network and meet other individuals. Also, if you do receive opportunities again, or even our honorable mention, some of them have those tiers, you can be celebrated and recognized in name on that foundation's website, also potentially at SU. So it's also another way to kind of lay digital breadcrumbs for who you are and give people opportunity to, you know, if they're searching you, to see information about you. And so, yeah, I would say one of the main values of applying for national awards is definitely both in terms of the application process, getting your name out there. And then ideally, if you're a recipient of one of these awards, you can also begin building that broader professional network that can really pay off down the road.
One other benefit of this, I think, that's really important is that it gives you practice writing about what you're doing and what you are working on. And I think mm-hmm. that writing about it can create clarity for you in other parts of your writing life, especially I'm thinking about somebody who's thinking about writing a dissertation or is in fact at that stage, the ability to articulate what you're doing and make it understandable to an audience of, in many cases, in most cases, really non-specialists can really, really help you, because you will have to know how to talk about and frame your work for multiple audiences. Getting started on that before you're done with it, before you have to go on the job market, is really, really helpful, I think. And I don't know how often people appreciate the benefits that that can create.
I completely agree. It has been amazing to see the transformation in graduate students' writing from the first draft they send me to the last one we work on when it comes to their ability to articulate their project, the value of their project for folks both within and outside of their field. And I would say that almost always, if not always, but I'm hedging it, that graduate students come to me afterwards and describe, regardless of whether or not they received the opportunity they applied for, that they feel more confident in the direction of their research project. They feel more confident in their ability to articulate its value to broader audiences. And they almost always also have a really solid piece of writing that they can use and reuse for other kinds of materials. So whether that be other awards they're interested in applying for or jobs along the line. So yeah, I think that is an it's just a wonderful opportunity to develop your writing skills for a variety of audiences.
This is all very important to highlight, especially because for many of these applications, unfortunately, you won't win, bluntly speaking. And
it's not you, it's them.
It's not you, it's them. Well, it's not you, it's everybody else, right?
It's everybody else.
There's so much competition for these things. And I think that it's really easy to get discouraged if you spend all this time, you work so hard, you didn't get anything from it. You know, how do I know that wasn't a huge waste of my time? Mm-hmm. And these are the kind of benefits that need emphasis in order to make that clear.
Absolutely.
That if you didn't spend the time to do this, you don't have this writing sample. You don't have this experience talking about your work. You didn't have this time thinking about your work, because writing is really thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very writerly process. And so much of grad school, whether you're at the master's level or at the doctoral level, is writerly. Not everybody wants to admit it, but it's a huge part of it. And getting this practice before it's really about the job market or about publishing can be a huge benefit, I think.
I completely agree. And I think that's exactly right. Like for graduate students, you know, I think especially for these very, very prestigious national awards that do offer quite a bit of benefit potentially over years, you know, there's a lot of applicants and the odds are stacked against you because there is a lot of applicants. But I think it's really important when you're thinking about the cost benefit of the time in which that will take away potentially from other things that you're working on, is that it really is a valuable professional experience, no matter what the actual outcome of the award itself is. And as long as you go into it knowing that, I think you will get a lot out of the experience of applying.
And best case scenario, or at least one of the scenarios, you get this incredible opportunity.
Yes, then you get the opportunity.
Yeah, and it's a game changer.
So one of the best ways for graduate students, especially early career graduate students, whether at the master's level or the PhD, to really gain a lot of experience in applying for awards, and also I think building the resilience needed to face the unfavorable outcomes that can sometimes happen in terms of just not getting them and kind of pushing through that disappointment, is really applying for awards that are still national or regional, in that they're, you know, not funded by Syracuse University, but they are, you know, not necessarily maybe the NSF GRFP or Fulbright research grant, but instead are things that are maybe offered by the professional organizations in your field for graduate student conference travel or summer research. And applying for those kinds of things can help you build, basically kind of establish, or the phrase that Dan often uses is breadcrumbs. You know, you've started to kind of pile on breadcrumbs. And so you're creating this trail or track record of success. And so in national awards, as in a lot of things in academic professions and many professions, is success leads to success. And so once you begin establishing a record of successful fellowship and scholarship acquisition, you can begin to really have a lot of evidence on your resume that other people care about funding what you do and funding you to do what you do. And that gives a lot of credence to others who are considering whether or not they want to do the same thing. And so before sometimes you even want to think about some of those big ticket awards, if you have time in your program, do look at smaller opportunities as well outside of Syracuse that you can apply for, because they're a great way to build experience in applying and also have a higher chance of success, because usually the applicant pool is going to be smaller.
It's a strange thing, and maybe it even sounds a little unfair, but for those who've been given opportunities, they get more opportunities.
Yep.
It's a strange thing, but it's true. And it's true, Melissa, that if you start off with smaller things, they can lead to bigger things. Everybody is looking to figure out who's going to go first, who's going to gamble on somebody first. And the lower the gamble when you start, the more likely you are to get something. There are other things that I think about too, like the Charlotte Newcomb for humanists and social scientists. That is very prestigious, but not necessarily at the national level, or not known in the same way as a Rhodes or a Fulbright or things like that. That is nevertheless extremely important. And I'm sure that you, as an English person, probably went to the Folger Library, and a lot of people get funding to do that. I hope you did too.
I did. No, that was one of the, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I do think, especially for folks who are in the humanities and social sciences, but I think there's ways that this has corollaries for other things in STEM, that if you're looking at, you know, some like research institutes or libraries, for example, do have really extensive funding opportunities that are more closely focused on individuals within specific fields. And I do think that largely for graduate students who, especially those who are at the dissertation stage, that those are going to be potentially more fruitful places to look for funding. I think that it's still valuable to apply for the some of the even more nationally recognized and applied to opportunities. But you're right, Dan, like it's just in some ways it's a numbers game, you know, like there's less people who are even eligible to apply for something like the Newcomb because of its specific focus. I know there's other awards for individuals who are studying, say, education, or there's specific awards for individuals who have, you know, some sort of research interest related to criminalization and war. I mean, there's things that can be really, really specific, but still very substantive. And because they can only ever have so many applicants, given the nature of that specificity, they really are often a really wonderful place to put your time and energy.
Absolutely. Where then can a student get help? I think that we have a complicated answer to this one.
Yeah, so I would say for any graduate student, you really want to think of having an ecosystem of support, basically, for any scholarship or fellowship. Your primary, you know, faculty advisor or PI should definitely be one of those members of that ecosystem, because you definitely want them to be able to help you describe your research often. Here at the Center for Fellowship and Scholarship Advising, most of us have backgrounds in the humanities. One of us has a background in law and international relations. But as you can imagine, that leaves a lot of gaps in our specialized knowledge, even within those fields. And so we just can't provide that for you. So you want to make sure that your faculty mentor is really aware of the things that you're applying for, is supportive of you doing so, and that you give them sufficient time to really offer their own expertise and advice on the way in which you're describing your research and interest in your particular field to support you. Now, outside of your department, You can reach out to the Center for Fellowship and Scholarship Advising for help. So as Dan mentioned, we're an office of three. So it's myself, our director, Jolyn Parker, and our other scholarships advisor, Adam Crowley. And we all have experience working on a variety of graduate-focused awards and are happy to do so, especially for awards that often can have both undergraduate and graduate applicants, like the Fulbright US Student Program, like the NSF GRFP, like the Critical Language Scholarship, et cetera. And we are also excited to now have the support of the Graduate School's Office of Professional and Career Development to offer support for graduate students applying for awards as well. And so Dan Olson Bang is now someone that you can also reach out to, especially if you're a graduate student who is interested in applying for a more niche award that is very specific to your discipline, or potentially something that, you know, is kind of outside of the portfolio of both grad and undergrad applying awards, or something that's very niche and is also dissertation completion focused. But because we are working together, as you can tell from my description, that's not a very solid fine line between what we help students with and what Dan helps students with. And so we really work together, honestly, depending on your needs as a graduate student, to figure out, you know, who is the best resource for you between our two offices to offer support. And often it's not a one or the other. It can often be both. So we just work case by case to figure out how best to support you in achieving your goals there.
As we wrap up here, what are some final thoughts or advice that you'd like to give to grad students?
Final thoughts and advice. So one of the things that we really haven't hammered on as much yet that I absolutely want to make clear before this conversation ends is that you have to start looking early for these opportunities. So, and that happens at multiple levels. So I would say begin looking early as a graduate student in terms of seeing what kinds of opportunities are available for folks pursuing master's or PhD degrees in your field. And just get a sense of what's out there. It might not be something that you can apply to for a few years, but if you know it exists, then you are prepared to actually begin the application process when you need to later. And you can also, and this is really important, you can also be strategic in how you spend your time as an early career graduate student. So you can build up the kind of professional background that one might need to be competitive for that award if it's something you really want down the road. So early as a graduate student, start looking. Second thing is you must be looking early, kind of always, because the application timelines for most of these awards are pretty long. So often you're going to be applying for an opportunity, sometimes 6 months to a year before you actually will want to have it in hand. And because of that, that means you almost always need to be looking in the fall, for example, what kind of funding needs you'll have for the following summer or the following fall. And so if you start looking, say, in October of a particular year for things to fund the kinds of experiences you want to gain for your research or to find just tuition funding, you'll probably be too late. you know, too late both in, you know, having had missed opportunities, or too late in terms of not giving yourself a lot of time to prepare to write a competitive application, because most of them will be due throughout the fall semester, some in early spring, but still. So the summer is actually a really great time to get a sense of what applications are appropriate for you to apply for in the coming year, given the needs that you might have the year following. Or say you're about to graduate from Syracuse, but you're interested in a sort of funded postgraduate opportunity. That's also something that you'll want to apply for at the very beginning of your fall semester of graduate school. And so, yeah, if you have any piece of advice that you leave with this from this conversation today, it is start looking early at the kinds of opportunities available so that you can make a plan early on how you're going to fit those applications into your time.
That's exactly right. It's important to highlight that these awards and opportunities that we're talking about are not going to fund you for next semester.
Yes.
And that's, I heard somewhere that, you know, you're looking at 6 months to a year before these things happen in terms of funding, which certainly obviously backs up what Melissa has just said. And it makes it very important that you have to prepare 3 months before that happens, right? Mm-hmm. So if it's 6 months, you start at 9 months. If it's a year, you start even earlier, 15 months, something like that. And that's what it takes. But the benefits, I think we both want to really emphasize, are tremendous. So I it's a very exciting opportunity. It's a very exciting time to have this collaboration start. And so I hope that you will take advantage of working with both Melissa and her office and me, and that you start to think of this as part of your professionalism portfolio.
Absolutely. Yes. We believe in you. Use the resources available to be successful.
And thank you so much, Melissa. This has been Syracuse University GradCast.